Deborah Lenning and Nancy Johnson interviewing Mr. Rudolph Marser. Okay, you enlisted in the Army. No, I mean you were drafted.
Drafted.
In the Army. How did you become an engineer?
Well, what it was, I went into battle, or into Camp Custer, and we got in there at night, about 8 or 9 o'clock, and they had where they took us into was two or three lieutenants were sitting there, and they were inquiring. They were looking for somebody for engineering units. And they started talking to me, and they wanted to know if I did any high school football, or I did any track work in high school. And one of them was quite an athlete. He had been a coach someplace. And he said, do you know anything about engineers? And I said, no, I had worked in a drugstore. And he said, maybe we can get you in the medical corps in the engineers. And that was how I happened to get in the engineers. So they put me down as an engineer, see. But I worked in a drugstore, but they thought probably I'd get in the medical corps in the engineers, because they were just forming this company, see.
Did you get into the medical corps?
No.
No,
I stayed
in the engineers.
Engineers, yeah.
Okay, and you trained at Camp Custer.
Camp Custer.
Could you describe your training experience?
Well, it was kind of rough and hard at first. And when we got in Camp Custer, the first night we went, they marched us down there. It was about 11 o'clock at night, and we had to go out and fill our straw ticks. We had to go out and get the straw, and they gave us a tick, and we'd go out and fill it and bring it in, and there was no roof on the building. We were just in the building, and it rained the first night. Boy, I thought, I wished I was home, but that's how I got down there. That's the first start.
And what did they teach you?
Well, mostly, I was only in there. We did mostly infantry work for the first 2 weeks, right out in the field, you know, with the marching, you know, around. And I had no military service of any kind, and they just trained us. And then they brought us in, and we had a supply sergeant by the name of Bill Rainey, and he was sick about half the time. And Captain Axtell said, "You worked in the store. Maybe you can go and work in the storehouse. That's where the engineering equipment was." And that's how I happened to get in there. Storehouse and the engineers, and I worked in the storehouse where the stuff was all the time, where the equipment was coming in for this engineering company we were forming. So that's how I helped to get in there.
And where did you go after Camp Custer?
Camp Mills, Long Island.
How long were you there?
About 2 weeks.
And then you sailed to England.
Sailed to Liverpool.
And what was that voyage like?
Well, it was kind of a rough affair. It wasn't very smooth. It was kind of, the boats weren't like they are here, and like the boats now. It was like the mess hall had water in it about half the time, if the sea was rough. You know, I streamed the water a couple of times, and the pumps wasn't working on the boat. But that's the only bad experience we had in that week.
Was it an American boat?
American boat, yeah.
Did you continue training in England?
Yeah, continued training in Aldershot.
Aldershot.
Yeah.
What were your impressions?
Well, it was one of them things that you wondered what it was all about, and you thought it was, you're going to be quite a big guy, you know, you're going to be a soldier, be a big guy, you know, be a captain or something like that. But that's about the way the feeling. I had a good feeling, just like I have in life. I've always had a good feeling in life, and I got along good, you know. And I stayed at Camp Custer, and then I had been in Camp Custer there for that length of time, and Bill Rainey was transferred, that sergeant was there, and they made me supply sergeant in charge of the engineering company. After that was, well, I got there, you know, when I first, and then when we left, I was supply sergeant going in. I had plenty of work to do on the equipment stuff, going in Aldershot and getting ready. And then we were in Aldershot there, and we stayed there. We trained there, too, in England. Mm-hmm. And I did some athletic work there. I did some racing there. The King's Guards were stationed next to us. And they had to have a track team, and they wanted to know if there was any Americans that could run, and I could always run like the Dickinson High School. And I went over and won a couple of medals, gold medals from the Queen or something, That darn bunch I was with. You see, and they had no ice in England. We had to drink that warm ale just like just as warm as that. You know the boys, they probably told you. And, you know, I would, they all said, boys, get gas for them. You ought to give you a lot of beer for them. Well, that's an out of shot. And then we shipped from there.
You were detached. Your battalion was separated
from
the
other
battalions. When did they go to France?
They must have went to France right after we left for Russia, see.
So you left first.
I think we did. I think we left.
But your equipment was sent ahead to France?
Our equipment was all sent to France from America here and landed in France. And they were waiting for us.
See, and you thought you were going to go to France?
We thought we were going to go to France, and all of a sudden we woke up. I knew that we were going to move that 2 or 3 days before we moved, because I was supply sergeant, because we had some equipment that they gave us in England. See, and then we went on British, all British. See, everything was British that was issued to us.
Did that cause any problems? Were there different calibrations, measurement systems?
A little bit, not too much. You had to know what to order, and you had officers that, if you didn't order the mules, you wouldn't get them, and all that kind of stuff. That was in America here, mostly, see. But when we got over there, we got the equipment issued to us when we got to Russia, see, my equipment, all that I needed for the engineers. We had 135 bicycles up in Archangel. I don't know what for, but we had bicycles.
Were they ever used?
No. They stayed in the warehouse. That's a picture of the warehouse I showed you there, that one picture there. Down there, that's the warehouse I had. That was full of stuff, see. Then we left England.
When did you first realize that you were going to Russia? 3 days?
About 3 days before, about 2 or 3 days.
Who told you?
Oh, kind of a roundabout way. One of the sergeants there said to me, Fred Jurgens from Detroit. He said to me, he says, you know where you're going? I said, he was a good buddy of mine. And then Fred Flatto, he was in the fire department in Detroit. He said, we're going to Russia. I said, you're crazy. He says, no. All of a sudden we got on the train the way we went, up through the North Sea.
What did you know about Russia then?
Well, I didn't know anything about it, see. But there was a Y man on there, a guy from the YM, and he was telling us all about it. We went into a wilderness there, you know. God, we knew he had been there before, and he was a bunk shooter, you know, he was. And we were going up there, and God, we sailed up the Divina River, and Archangel City was more modern than Benton Harbor and St. Joe is now. It had streetcars and everything.
What did you know about Bolshevism?
I didn't know too much about that, because we haven't heard much of it in this country, except that the Bolos, I know that's the communists today, the Bolsheviks are the communists today, and the Kazakhs were there. All the Russians talked about is how great the Kazakhs were, you know, they were supposed to be great when you landed there, you know, all that stuff. And the guy from the Y was giving us a line, he gave us quite a line on that, you know, but they had just overthrown the Bolsheviks had just overthrown the Tsar and Tsarina before we got there. See, we landed there, and that was just over. Then, see, just taken over. See, the country was an awful shape. Archangel City was a city, I would say, about the size of Holland. It had 146,000 people dumped into it. Young people all dumped in one pile. Can you imagine what it is? And that was only about 3 months before we got there. See, and not too much food they gave the people.
Did your officers give any of the men lectures or any information to help prepare them for what?
Nothing much, no. Ours didn't even.
Describe your voyage from England
to
Archangel.
That was a rough one.
What boat were you on?
We were on the Grampian. It was a freighter. It was a freighter. Did you have any of them other fellows been? I'm pretty sure we were on the Grampian.
It wasn't the Titus?
No, it was a grant. There was a lot of boats in it.
Oh, yeah.
There was a lot of boats in it, see. And it was a porthole, see, like this freighter. And 8 bunks were built, you know, 8 high, see, or a fort high on the side in the hold, see. And you had to cover that hold up at night, see, so the planes would go over, could see if you'd light a cigarette, see, above, see. And they could look down the hold, say, oh, it's a hot one. And some of them had to roll. Imagine up there sleeping down the bottom. Oh, brother, you can't realize what it was. That was a rough one, see. And then some of them got sick, quite sick, you know. And some of them I could eat anything. I still can. Nothing bothers me. My stomach's up. But I've seen men there that overdosed 40, 50 pounds on that. I had a very good friend of mine, Herman Bartz, a Lutheran minister from Kenosha, Wisconsin. He was a chaplain. He went down Pat Haley was the catcher for Connie Mack's ball team in Philadelphia. And he was on that boat from Flint. I never saw a great big bird larger than Bill. Oh, I don't think he ate two meals the whole 25-day period. Couldn't if we could keep it down, we'd be over the side. Oh, them plumbing poor guys, it was rough, up and down, just like that, just like a cork in the water the boat was. See, it was rough, I said. I know some of the boys, oh, I bet the other boys would tell you some too, Danny's, oh, my brother. I felt sorry for him because I could take it, but Herman Barks came to me one day and he wanted to know what to do. Well, I said, if that mess sergeant, Walt Carlson from Cadillac, Michigan, was a mess sergeant, I said, if Walt can get you some tomatoes, or a can of tomatoes, cold tomatoes, just, and that's what happened. He kept them. They had some tomatoes that they used to use in the mess, and that juice from the tomatoes ate that acid up, and he did all right. But everybody was on it then, and there was no tomatoes left. That's it.
Now, what kind of medical aid were the sick men given? Were there doctors on board?
Yeah, there was a doctor. There was one from Philadelphia, Major Henry, and there was a dentist on their roll. Lieutenant Rowe, he was a dentist. He was drunk all the time after he got to Russia, though. It's a British, he got British ration, he got British whiskey. We couldn't have it, you know. The American Army was drying that first World War, you know. The second World War, where they could get it, but then some of them boys were old. They came back after they got used to it, see, the food.
Mm-hmm.
And different, the food was different. See, we wasn't used to mutton in the American Army. In England, I was there then 3-4 weeks, we were there in England, that's all we had. Had a lot of it, you know. So, and you know, mutton is about that much tallow on the top, and you get kind of tired, and I'm not a mutton eater, but I ate it.
When did you debark in Archangel?
I just can't remember the date. We got off the boat at Archangel City. It must have been September. It's in September.
Early September?
Early September.
What were the initial reactions of the Archangel residents to the arrival of the American troops?
Well, at first it seemed to be pretty good. All they were looking for was something to eat, you know, in Archangel City, and cigarettes. Cigarettes, that was it, you know. And food. Food was very short there, you know, at that time, because they just didn't have it, that's all. See, and they had just been overthrown. They weren't used to a lot, you know, even under the Tsar, you know, because the Cossacks would come through and take it, you know, like through the farms, you know, and take pick up stuff like that. That's why they overthrew the Tsar, you know, and the Bolsheviks were going to make it better like the communists today. But the eggs were very short, milk, mukha, like they said, and yaitza was eggs, and they were all short, you know, and that stuff. And but they were people that were hungry, you know. We had hardtack, you know, they learned that name quick as that, just as we'd have it on the boat, God, anything for hardtack, you know. So we had pretty good, we had rations, you know, but they were British rations, and our cooks got used to making stuff different, you know, see, and stuff like that.
Did you have any other impressions of the city or the people?
No, I was raised with all different nationalities, like German people, my mother was a German, and the Jewish kids I ran around with, and the Italian kids, their dad, and the Greeks had food stores and Stephen. We lived in a neighborhood like that,
mm-hmm.
where everybody ran around together, the kids did, and I knew what was up, but it was hard at first to get acquainted with the people, you know, in the city, because the Jewish people controlled all the jewelry stores, and the banks were all Jewish controlled in our city, so they were all controlled. And the theaters were too. They had theaters. They're just like in a modern city. But that's about the only thing I can do. We had pretty good officers, all of ours were. Our captain was a good guy. They were all mostly Wisconsin men. One was a lawyer, one was an engineer. Captain Axel was a lawyer, or an engineer from Kenosha, Wisconsin. Madison, Kenosha, all through there.
What were your first duties in Archangel?
Well, mine was mostly getting lined up, you know, on the supplies. Mine getting the warehouse, that warehouse we show you here. That transfers from Archangel City. I went across the river to a place called Bakaritsa. across the river there, and we had a warehouse there, a big one, and that's when we started building in. All the stuff was coming in off the transport, see. And I had been over there probably 2 or 3 weeks, or two, no, probably 2 weeks. One day the captain came in and said, the medical college, you see, and they read my record. I had worked in the drugstore, see. So they had had another boat that came from South America called the Salambo. Had a lot of infantry men on it, see, and engineers too, some infantry men and engineers. And they got this flu. And you see, we had very few hospitals. Archangel City had hospitals, but not out like Bacharitz and all the villages out there. So they went and made straw bed in there for them. They died like that. Chipping out that. And then with these other stuff you read about, the cemeteries and stuff here, but a lot of them people, soldiers, were shipped back, I guess, to England. When I was reading all these articles today, I wondered what they did with all the bodies. And they weren't all ours either. They were Englishmen and everybody in that city. But I felt sorry for some of the guys. They had no medication. And then they went on this thing. So we came in. And I happened to say to Major Henry, I says, I wonder if you take a shot, maybe it'll fix him up and make him see our arm. We had to get the scratch from the roof.
Yeah.
And they took care of a lot of that, took care of a lot of food. That's what they said. They found about 3 times in the shot. They finally brought him on.
That was the only kind of medication they had for him?
Well, there was a little quinine in the institute, but there was no penicillin hadn't come over.
Did anybody on the Grampian come down with the Spanish flu?
Some of the boys, they fought it back. Because we were in the warehouses there. See, the British Army had moved in there. They had been in there. See, their warehouses had whiskey. We got whiskey, no matter how we got it. Underneath and over and up.
While you were on the voyage, though, did any of them come down with it?
Yeah, a little bit on the boat, but not too bad. Their temperatures wasn't as high. You know, the temperatures were way outside.
Okay. Did you man the streetcars when the Russians went on strike in Arcadia?
I was on the back end of them for a little while. Yeah, when they went on strike, there was, we had a place called Bacharitsa Station, and you went across the river to Bacharitsa, right across, but this was Bacharitsa Station. Then to go uptown into Archangel City, and Salambo Station was way down below, see, way down the hill, see. The guys ran the streetcars there, the infantry did. But I worked on the streetcar just a little while one morning, not too long, because I went to the warehouse, engineering and warehouse, with all the reports from our company across the river, see. But the Americans were running the streetcar. Then we froze to that. See, the Russians ran them right out in the open.
See. How did the people of Archangel feel about that? Did they think you were strike breakers or anything?
Well, no, they didn't seem to think too much of it. You couldn't understand them. Sometimes they'd look at you, you know, like that. And you wondered what it was all about. The same as, you see, they had just been thrown into all the confusion with the Tsar and then killed and all that stuff. You know? They didn't like the Tsar or the Tsarina or any of the daughters or anything like that, but they thought it was a mix-up affair, see. And the other guys were taken over, you know, and the Cossacks would come through and run the cities, you know. But people were scared. And I could talk about the German, see, so I could talk just a little, not too good. My German is about as good as it is now. And I could talk to the Russian Jews, see, because they could talk German, see, and they'd tell it all about it, see. And they started hiding everything, see, like their jewelry and stuff, because they were coming through the villages, you know, and the Bolsheviks were in there, collecting, you know, like doing and stuff like that, see, from these people that they're supposed to have all the money in the country, you know. And the banks were having that trouble, too.
How much did you know about the political situation in Archangel? Did you learn anything from those Jews?
Well, a little bit. They weren't too hot about it. The big issue was the Bolsheviks didn't believe in no religion, you know, see. And the Jews had their church, you know, see. And the other churches were all big cathedrals. God, when you can come in, you go into Archangel Harbor, you could see them copper houses, you know, you'd see pictures of the Jews or the Russian churches over for miles where the sun would shine on. And you wonder what about it. And then all of a sudden you'd see that box out in front of the church about that big, you know, right out in front. And that was where the people got their money in, you know, for the church. You know, see, they didn't have hardy shoes on their feet on the bazaar either, you know, see, and they had burlap sacks and stuff in the wintertime. You know. And this was in September and this was still warm, but you can imagine what the winter would be. And they would put money in there, other than the Cossacks took their boxes out of there, so. trees. You don't know where they went, but they were gone.
Did you know that there had been a coup the night before you landed in Archangel?
They were going to what?
That there had been a coup. They'd overthrown the government the night
before. Oh, yeah, we've heard about it from that white fellow on the Y. I knew it. I heard it from the fellow on the Y because he was stationed right in the same boat that I was. And he told me that they were going to overthrow him.
Not the Russian government, the city government.
Well, the city, no, I didn't know. But they had quite a time there for a while because over where I was over there in that outfit, they had a sawmill, you know, in Bakaritsa, a big sawmill, see, and it was all run by women, and you wondered why. See, and they picked up all the bushes and took them out. It was all run by women, see. That little kid that there, Zary Kamaliki, you know, in that picture, that little one, I think Terry DeNoyers, if it wasn't, it was Rex Frenz, we clothed him and everything. He worked with him around in the warehouses, under the bunks, in our bunks there all the time. Well, I felt sorry for the kid. He was looking for his mama all the time. And he called me Russian, and it means Bolshoi, means big. Malinky means small. Mm-hmm. I was Bolshoi sergeant, and the other guy, Ed DeNoyers, or the other guy was Malinky, that little sergeant. And they were always looking for us. And Ruples they wanted too. They got smart towards the end. They wanted Ruples. They could go to Archangel and buy stuff, see.
Okay. What do you think that the Archangel residents wanted in the form of government? You said they were scared, but what do you think they really wanted?
I think they wanted to get out from under the Tsar. I do. I think they wanted to get out from under the Tsar. Because, you know, up at Bakaritsa, right up from where we were, where that warehouse was, where the Tsar and the Tsarina and then lived, in, that was their summer house. You should have seen the stables up there. Oh, elaborate things in their homes up there on the Divina River, you know. Great big all log cabins, all beautifully painted and everything, big fences around as high as this house, you know, all around. And that's where they go in the summer. That was their summer home up in the Divina River, up at Buffalo. And I think that's what the people were worried about. See. The country, as far as Russia is concerned, I have no time for them at all, and I don't trust them at all. Right at the present time, I don't. I didn't like this winter, and I still don't like the last one that went by. And I don't like all this monkey business about all these storms and stuff. Because they've got some smart boys out there. They can change the atmosphere of this country in no time overnight. Canadians, you know, I read a big article in Detroit paper about this last winter. They said that somebody's blowing off some bombs up there and causing all that snow to come down. Big article out of Quebec. And I've always said there was funny stuff going on. That's all good. And I don't know what's... I hope nothing happens to it. Because I love this old America. It's been good to me, my family. But I hope we don't get mixed up in another war. So I hope not.
You said that you think the Archangel residents didn't like the Tsar.
I don't think so.
But what do you think their opinion was, like, towards the Bolsheviks or towards... The British martial law government or towards
what I think they thought mm-hmm. that the Bolsheviks were going to make them like the Tsar, rich like the Tsar. I think they painted them that kind of a picture, see. Mm-hmm. See, they were going to be big, you know, like they called it Bolshoi, yeah, because they all, communists are Bolshoi, you know, Bolsheviki, Bolshoi, they used to tell me that over in that sawmill, them guys that worked over there in the sawmill, you know, oh, Bolsheviki. Merikansky ne dobro, meant no good, you know, American for no good, ne dobro, see. And it's one of them things, you know, like politics do, you know, like that. And I think that's where the whole thing was, you know, see.
Did you ever think that the Archangel residents were afraid that the Americans and the British were there to restore the monarchy?
I think they had some feeling after we landed there, see. And I think the only reason I think we were there is to keep the Germans from coming in the back way into England.
Uh-huh.
See, down through the North Sea, see, we were coming in the back way. Because Russia had been overthrown, see. And I think that's what they thought. And they didn't like the Germans any better than they did us after we were there. They liked us after we were there because we fed them and everything. But it was one of them things. I think that's what the Archangel City people thought. But after they found out that we were going to protect them there, I guess, from coming down through, they were going to come right down through the Archangel. In the Archangel, and get out through the North Sea to go down in one sea. And that's why we were up there, because I was up there, but the next, God, everybody had gone home. way up there. God, we were up there in July yet the next year. They were parading in Detroit. There we were up there.
Let's see. How did the Archangel residents feel about the flu? Did they were got stricken with it eventually?
Yeah,
too,
they did
they?
Too. Yeah.
Did that create tension also? That
disease
that
brought
in. Certain
percentage of it did. The biggest trouble was down at a place called Salumbo Station. It was down at the end of it, down by the river. Great big river down Salumbo Station, and the river flooded down there a lot. And it dysentery. Mosquito flood. Big flies, you know. And they'd bite you. See? And when I was there, this was in July, see, with some of the infantry had left. That's when they hit us. See, with it down there, see? And the water, the water we had aboard, and right away when they found out that we were getting it, see? And this dysentery wasn't like the dysentery out here, but we had no medication, see? Only Castoroma. And they said, we have to use, you know, like we have troughs like that for Castoroma. So they had a bottle of a cup full of Castoroma in the sea. Did that for 6-7 hours, trying to get that dysentery down there, see? Like that. And then we were ready to go home in September, and the boys got it in our house. Got it bad, and you had to walk to the boat. It was about 2.5 miles to the boat, and you had to walk to the boat. They wasn't taking patients out because that would be a germ going out of the country. We got them on the boat. they all got on, but some of them were pretty sick. But that's the disease was the nearing disease. I shut it because I knew about it through drugstore. You know, so. But the troops, our troops. Our engineers were pretty good. I don't think there was over two that lost their wages out of the whole bunch of them. But 250 in our company, it was two guys. It was in Detroit. They got them cured out there. They went home. They laid state and breast on them. When we get landed in breast, on them, they state and breast.
Were they court-martialed?
Yeah, they were court-martialed. Lost their thing.
Whose command were you under? Whose command were you under?
In my company?
Yeah.
Captain Nextel.
What did you think of him?
He was a good guy. Nextel was a pretty good job. Then we had Lieutenant Johnson. He was a lawyer. And then Nan Carroll. He was another one. He was a second Louis. Johnson was the first Louis. Captain Nextel. And then we had a little short guy from the regular army, the name of Nixon. He was a crazy little man. Just about this high. But he was a good guy. I liked my officers. I never fought with him much. The first sergeant was from Detroit. He was with the Detroit City Police, Fred Jerkins. And Fred Fratto was a sergeant with me, not my officer, in our outfit. And then Walt Carlson was from Cadillac. And our stable sergeant was from Maine. That was my officer, our outfit. We had a lot of other sergeants too, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We had one from New York, Cypern, Jewish boy. And then Hanson from Kenosha. We had quite a few. I had a lot of Wisconsin men. In my engineer, 157 were from Wisconsin. But you see, the 339th Infantry were mostly Detroit.
Yeah. Did you ever have any dealings with any of the British officers?
Not too much. They gave me quite a rough time because I was surprised and I had to get supplies from them. They probably had quite a rough time, especially. You know, like wintertime, you know, and all. Like, we had what they called shackling boots. They were canvas boots like this, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they were wrapped around like shackling with them or clothes with them. And then, you know, if they would get in, like, in marshes, you know, the guys would. And, you know, then that canvas of water would go right through it, you know, so then they'd freeze their feet. Oh, I saw things like this.
I always thought those were really warm.
Well, they're warm, but if they get wet, they all get wet and freeze, you know, see. And they were, it soaked right up, see, that shackling, see. And they had quite a time, and then you have to get them some more there. We haven't got them. But these guys in like hand gloves, you know, like engineers, and you know, for shoveling, you know, and moving stuff, you know, like going up and building barbed wire, you know, barbed wire gloves that were supposed to be leather, end up with canvas wire. No time that barbed wire would tear them gloves all to pieces, you know. I had quite a time getting supplies, but I would work them some way. But food is, the mess sergeant, I don't think he had trouble because it was all under British ration, corned beef. And you see, like, we would start out, this Herb down from Wisconsin, he was a sergeant and I out there, and we had these little Russian horses. We probably had 30 head, you know. And they all drove their own horses, you know, the government paid for it. And we'd load it like barbed wire and rubber boots and stuff when spring was coming, and axes and shovels and stuff like that. We'd start out then, see, one in front and one in the back, see. And we'd always have a whistle if we had to stop, you know, or something. But, you know, sometimes that we had to have straw in there for the horses, too, for the stop at night and everything. We'd probably go, 20 miles a day or something like that. And sometimes I would go, most of the time I would go to a place called Shushka. It was about 22 miles from the park, Kansas City. And then they would cut across country this way, like that. And they would travel pretty fast. It was rough up there, you know. And then, you know, it would be cold all the time, you know. See. And you couldn't build fires until you got to that point, because if you didn't, the Bolsheviks could come through the woods and get you, you know. And they'd take a pot shot at you once in a while. But the Russian people were all right. They were just like any Russian or Polish people, you know. I got a big fit today. We were coming out of travel in down here this morning. And there's a little girl with pictures on that picture working at Wild mm-hmm. Drugstore. And her dad is a Russian priest here. And they were up right behind her. And he'd come walking out this morning. And God, he saw me coming. I'll dross with you, you know, because I met him through his daughter, you know. He's still preaching up there. He's a Russian minister here. There's some quite a few Russians here in Polish. And he said to me, "Well, know how I was." And I said, "Fine." And he said, "I'll never forget when I shook hands with him, dross with you." You know, you walk in a Russian house now, there's 20 people, and you go all the way and dross, 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 all the way around. That's the way we are, see. And the same when you leave, das vidanya, that means goodbye. You got to say the das vidanya, all the das vidanya, das vidanya, all the way out, see. That's the way we live, see.
Did you ever encounter any Bolsheviks in Archangel?
Oh, yeah, there were a lot of them.
Did you ever talk to
them? Yeah, there was one that we had, we were having trouble with supplies and the trains going out, like down the, what they call the 91st First Corps. And when we'd load them trains at like barbed wire and stuff like that, they were always hitting them trains at night at a certain point. And this damn guy worked for me as a carpenter in that damn warehouse. And he was piping them off across the river. Tell me, you know, he goes with you. But what could you do? You couldn't kill the guy. He had a family and everything. He was a good carpenter, very good. God, he could do anything with an axe. He'd build a table like that with an axe. You should see those things. They were handy. Like houses and logs and stuff, chipping down to build the corners. You know. And all hemp packed, you know, all the hemp. You know, they pound hemp in, you know, to keep it warm. You know. People can't realize how that cold it got up there. And all they had, you know, like a place like this was a house. You'd walk in, the stable would be over here. And you walk in like a door, like just like you would come in there. And then you walk in, and then there's a big stove built here, right like that, right up in the wall, all out of brick. And that's where a lot of them slept, up there on top of that stove. They build a fire in there, see? And then to pull the fire at night, and then that wood stove would be hot, and that's how they heated them on there. And that's the way they all lived. The average one would probably have eggs once a year. And milk, they were always after mukha, that meant milk. And there were very few cows. See, it was rough there for the people, you know, see. And they ate a lot of black bread. And I ate it a couple of times. It's like in the store, you know. Blacker than the dickens. See, tougher than hell.
Did you know anything about the way the Bolshevik prisoners were treated in Archangel?
No, I didn't hear much about that. I didn't know too much about that. The Bolsheviks, they took them out of there, I think, after they got in there, after the Bolsheviks took the country over. They got all their the ones that were sent up by the Tsar, you know, for being against the Tsar, you know. I think that they knocked off a lot of the ones, the money ones in Russia after the Tsar was killed. Or after they killed the Tsar and all that, you know, because they went in the clean house, you know, that's the bunch that's in the house. And they always bragged that they would be Bolshevik. They'd tell you all about it, you know, when we first went there, they'd just been overthrown, see, you know, in 1917. And then another year later, see, it kind of built up. They were getting stronger and stronger and stronger, see. And the country didn't go down under Bolshevism, but it wasn't too good under the Tsar, see, and they knew that, see.
How about the Bolsheviks who were prisoners that were in our game.
In our game. I don't know what ever became of them. A lot of them, you know, were let out after the Tsar was to see other prisoners, you see. Because they worked up there and they made it in the mines way up north, what they call Siberia. Under the Tsar, see, he sent them up there. So you were political prisoners. Anybody that left them, you know. Politics are.
Are you speaking of military prisoners?
Yeah, military, yeah.
No, I mean the political prisoners in Archangel. A
yeah.
lot of Bolsheviks were arrested.
Yeah.
Do you know how they were treated?
I don't know how that was.
The British arrested them.
Yeah. Yeah, the British, we had a lot of British troops up there. We had a lot of, we had quite a few French troops up there too. That's right, stationed right in Bucharest. They didn't soldier much, they just were around there.
Did you ever have any dealings with Stuart, Colonel Stuart, the American in charge of all the...
Oh, that's flies up there. He was up there. Colonel Stuart was up there in charge of everything. And he was in Archangel City, Stuart
mm-hmm.
was. Yeah, that's where he was. Yeah. I had no dealings with him. I got all my orders through engineering headquarters, and I'm trying to think of my commander's name or my major's name in Grand Rapids. I've known them. They all know my son and my son knows them over there. All they were out of, he was out of Grand Rapids. But that's where I got all my orders from, this engineering headquarters down in Archangel. And then I would go back to Bacharitsa. And the same as Company B would, or Company A would go back to Bacharitsa. Nankara, he was from Sault Ste. Marie. And he would go back. See, we got all our orders from our headquarters, and they got their orders from Stuart.
Was the engineering headquarters in Archangel, was that commanded by the British?
No, Americans. American command, yeah. Axtell was in charge of our company, and then they had an engineer that was in charge of them. So, the infantry, I think, was controlled by Stuart, too. He was an infantry command side of the major. Well, you know, a lot of it was you know, the command and all that stuff. It was so mixed up that nobody knew what it was all about, you know, on account of the country being.
What? How much did you know about the purpose of the mission?
Nothing. I didn't know a thing about it when we went up there. We didn't know what it was all about. And when we come back, everybody asked me. I couldn't tell them. What do you know? You know? What you up there? What the hell did there? Frozen brain.
Did you know that the Americans were put under British command only on the condition that they would stay out of the Civil War?
I didn't know that.
President Wilson.
Yeah. It sounded a little like it when he was up there, you know, just keep your nose out of it. We're in charge, you know. Ironsides was the commander of the troops up there. Yeah. He'd come along there walking through that, you know, where that warehouse is, where he'd come strutting in there, walking in there with these games, and everybody would jump with attention, you know, little Ironsides would come in. He got one morning, he'd come dashing there, he says, "Who was in here last night?" I said, "I don't know, wasn't that just the day before Thanksgiving, I'll never forget it." I saluted him. He said, "You in charge?" And I said, "Yeah, this is my warehouse." "Why? What's the matter? Who was you in this hot warehouse last night?" And I said, "Yeah, I guess I was in here. What time?" "Oh, 8, 9 o'clock." I said, "Yeah, I was in here." "Why?" He says. And I said, "Well, what's the matter now?" And I said, he said, "Somebody stole 23 cases of whiskey." And we wouldn't do that. Not us. God, they. I said, "They better not get over in that barracks. They're all drunk over there." This Jim Zeppelin, I'll never forget if you ever talk to him, you know, that one from Grand Haven. Ask him if he knows me, and, you know, because I was from Muskegon. He come in there into Archangel, or into Bacharitsa one day from, he'd been way up the river someplace up there. And he come in, and he was sick in the day, and I give him a quart of scotch. He asked him, he said, "He cured me of the flu." Oh, we nailed him for a lot of stuff. God. Food, flour, mukka, God, you could sell that to the... God, every Russian went to buy mukka, mukka, mukka.
What did Ironside do about the...
Oh, nothing. Oh, he couldn't. He was going to take over the engineer headquarters. Must have been, it wouldn't be his men steal it. I don't know. Why do we stand around in front of him and lie like that?
What did you think about him?
He was all right. There was nothing the matter. He's a soldier. He's a British soldier. He mm-hmm. he was a rough and ready. He was a great big guy, dressed like, oh, God, immaculate. Just like that, his uniform, everything shining. Well, he didn't polish it, his help polished it. His help polished it, yeah. I liked Ironsides for that part. I got acquainted with them after a while, after that few insights there. And then we had a little trouble there for a while there because they were stealing everything, like compasses and stuff, you know, and they could sell them, you know, some down markings and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Black market.
Black market, yeah. Cigarettes was the black market. They got one in Grand Rapids at Bill Morris. You know, if you ever get to Grand Rapids outfit, Bill Morris in Grand Rapids had a big bowling alley. He was in charge of all the 339th Infantry. He's had the big canteen, and right next to this warehouse, that picture, he had a warehouse, and they ran a big canteen there about that time. Yeah, you know, like cigarettes and candy bars and everything he had, and they sold them through the canteen, you see.
Bill Morrison.
Grand Rapids.
Is he still alive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he is. I think Bill Morrison's still alive in Grand Rapids. You'll get a lot, if you get a hold of that post in Grand Rapids, or if you go to that outfit, ask them guys down there, because they can give you a lot of information on that.
So, if you didn't know that what Wilson's condition on you know, the Americans being over there, so you never questioned your orders or thought that they might not be legal.
Yes, we learned that when we went in. We were soldiers, and that was it. And you see, the older fellows did, probably some of them thought that they'd like, some of them were 28 and 29 years old, some of these guys that were with me, you know. And, see, I was only 22, see. And got young kids, you see, according to them. Some of them were, well, Fred Jerkins, I think, was about 32. He was a sergeant, see. And on Fred Faddo, and then there was a lot of them in Detroit, you know, and they were all older men, see. And they wondered what the hell it was all about. Well, like, when they pulled the infantry out, though, see, and we sat up there and waited, we wondered what they bury us up here?
Yeah. Where did you go after Bakaritsa, and when?
Well, I stayed in Bakaritsa right until we got ready to leave.
You were there the
whole
time?
All the entire time I was in Bakaritsa, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you never saw any action? You didn't work on the line?
No, I was not on the line. I was sending supplies up continuously up there from Bakaritsa, right up that crack, went right up, right straight through Bakaritsa. I used to get out of Bakaritsa a lot, delivering supplies, so where Petropolis was, you know, this guy, George Petropoulos, I went over on across to, I think it was some sea over there, and he was cook over there. And that poor guy could hang both of us all around. Oh, I put soap and sugar on. That's what we used to use here to go for boys. It helped him a little bit, but he'd be outside cooking. He was telling my wife about it when we was the last meeting. He had a metal slab about this big and about that big, and dig a hole, put a fire underneath, and that's how he'd fry the stuff and cook it outside. We had no stoves.
Where did you say that he was at?
I think Shuska was the name, but I'm not sure. But you ask him. He was over there on that front over there, and I think that was a Russian-German settlement over there, see.
Could it have been Shenkrist?
Maybe it was Shenkrist. I believe it was. I called it Shuska or something like that. Maybe it was. He was over there. Petropoulos was over there.
Okay, well, thank you.
Yeah.
Are there any particular experiences that you had over there that you would like to tell us about?
Well, there was a lot of the some of it, you know, like we would start out on these convoys, you know, and we'd get the ration for the trip, see. We'd have the ration for the trip.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if it was going to be a week, you'd get a can of corned beef, see, and probably some hardtacks and tea. And I never drank tea in my whole life. My mother,
mm-hmm.
when I was a little kid, every Friday night, we had to take a whole cup of Asuna tea and drink it for our bowels. See, and I could never drink tea after that. I don't yet to this day. I couldn't drink a cup of tea. The minute I smell that damn Asuna leaf. So I started out with that iron corned beef, you know, and we put it on the bonfire and heat it up, you know, for a night. And pretty soon, you know, how corned beef is in the bottom. You end up at about that much tallow in the bottom of the can towards the end of the week, see. And boy, if you can't take it, you start breaking out, and boy, the skin trouble on that basket. That too much of that oil would come out, and they'd break off. But I never broke out because my whole stomach can take anything. And they always used to see that thing, he'll eat garbage if it's flavored right. And that's the only experience I had. Some of them poor guys. Oh, I felt sorry for some of them. And we were lucky with the venereal disease in our house. Only two out of the whole bunch. Some of them.
Okay, we missed a little bit of the tape, and I asked you whether you had seen action, and you said no, you had remained an archangel. Mm-hmm. And then you were telling me about the size of the other man that went out on the task.
The sergeant, and once in a while, very few times a lieutenant, very few times, but about 15 men to 30 men on big detachments. And the medical corps would follow through sometimes, you know. And we had one young fellow that was in the, he wouldn't carry a gun. He had something, you know, with us. And we had one with a, he was a good soldier, very good in anything. He'd do anything, and he worked there, but he never carried a gun. And they'd go to the medical corps and go out, and he went out and picked up a couple of wild men out of the field and bring the snow up there. And I felt sorry for him. Spy in the front, sit up in the front, right up in the front, sit up in the, you know, like that where they had the machine gun, and that's some outpost that wasn't used anymore, that the Russians had got that close to it, you know. They'd be right out there in front. They didn't care. They'd sit out there and watch. And they were lucky. It seemed like somebody was with them, because they'd come back and walk them back in a couple of days, and you know, just take some rations and sit and watch the railroad.
Mm-hmm.
See that railroad, that transmitter, the Russian railroad. It was two factions fighting.
You said that Sergeant was generally in charge of the detachment
because there
was such a shortage of officers.
Sure.
And that it was unusual. You said you had a friend from Detroit who was older.
Yeah.
What was his name?
Fred Jerkin, yeah.
And he had been in the service
before, yeah.
And he said it was unusual.
Sure, because in the service, the lieutenant was usually in charge and all that. Anything out of that's why they make all these lieutenants. Sergeants are in charge, but the lieutenant is in charge of everything. He goes back to the orders from the sergeant from the lieutenant.
And you also said that the supplies were very thin, and that oftentimes the men had more work to do because the detachments were smaller.
Gotcha.
Okay. And how well would you say that the men were trained and prepared for the job they had?
Well, I don't think, you know, like, I don't want to say anything, but when you think of the Second World War and the men that were going into Italy, like into the Alps, you know, these soldiers, like the skiers, I never had a pair of skis on, snowshoes on my feet in my life, and we didn't either, most of these guys were on. We didn't have snowshoes, we didn't have money to buy skis in them days, us guys, and when we got up there, we'd have snowshoes. But we didn't, and skis especially, and then the Frenchmen, you know, that came up there, and for all they could go through the woods, just like, why, you'd see them buggers here, and they'd be up there 6 blocks away from before you could turn your head on it. That's how fast they could go, see, and they could go right through the woods, you know.
Because they had been
trained from the French, you know. And then they tried to learn us, and that went a while, and it couldn't be done. But the equipment was there. I had enough skis and snowshoes and then where else? Supply the army in France. Americans got so, you paid for it. Your dad and mother paid for it after the war. See, the British collected on them. Them damn coats we had, I think they charged back the United States $114 a piece. Just the coat for us guys to wear up in Russia.
Was the clothing adequate besides the Shackleton boots?
Yeah, well, it was accurate. If it wouldn't have been for the conditions, if we could get them one, like they would get into trouble, they were worn, and then they for a hat were worn, but it was just rough getting them, you know. See, they didn't want to dish them out. So I talked to Ironside about it once, and he said that he would see what we got, but that didn't really work. And he could talk to this guy, and then he'd walk out of there.
common was frostbite.
Oh, quite common, quite common. And they say don't rub snow on them, so we didn't rub snow. I didn't have too much trouble with that stuff. My skin must have been ordered for some of them, especially the blonde. Difference in the body.
Was it very severe?
What we use the money, like the chilblains, you know, on your feet, you know, your kids, you know, they don't want to do that, but say, oh, they all have them up there, and we take the soap and vinegar, that's what we rub them with, you know, see, that would come up, because it itch like the victims, you know. I had, for a little while, but then I thought of what my mother used to use. So we got some vinegar up in Archangel, and got some salt, and vinegar mixed together, and we rub it on that Canada. And we had some fellows from northern Michigan, see, like up around Sault Ste. Marie. They knew all about that. So see, we had Racky from up there, he was a sergeant with my outfit. And the funny part of it, and the funny, we were going up to a convention in Traverse, and we got just within a mile of Traverse, and they had it on the air. And Ratty and his wife was coming to the convention. She could both back to him car. But that take the zip out of me for a while. And he was a sergeant right next to me in the service. And they were coming down from the Sioux, and we were going up to Traverse, out of the ski. But when you think of it, he was quite the guy. He knew all about Chilblains and all that stuff, because he lived way up across American Sioux.
What was the type of quarters that you lived in Archangel back in the summer?
Well, mine was that boxcar, mostly. Uh-huh. I was in that boxcar, but we had barracks there, you know, right back off where this warehouse is, back over there next to Cricket, with warehouses there. And we had wooden stoves. We stoked them with wood, you know, and they were big can-like stoves, you know, and bunks, you know, built in there.
And was it warm?
It was warm, yeah, because we'd keep it warm. Throw the wood in there. No parlor. You get. Oh, is that mine?
What were the sanitary conditions like in Archangel?
See, I was a druggist, and, you know, with conditions, you know, and there was no Lysol, none of that stuff. Everything was both stuff. And ours wasn't too good in our warehouse where we were. I gotta go to the girls' room, and I'll be back.
Yeah, strike that.
Old restaurants and things like that. You know, there was restaurants there too, you know, in Archangel City. And not too clean. The theaters weren't. There was a theater that wasn't too clean. And the guys would get in some of these restaurants, and they wouldn't be scrubbed, you know. And the Russians would use them, and we had to use them. It was one of them things. And soap was there. The only soap I could find in the whole darn country was Lifebuoy soap. That's all we had. And boy, I bought all the druggist had up there. I could talk a little. He talked Russian too, and he had a drugstore called Apotheke, Russian Apotheke, and he had Lifebuoy soap. And I told him to get some more. And he was going to get me some from England, but never got it. Yes, but they had no American soap. And then we had soap there that made from fish stuff. You know, fish soap. Mm. Oh, if I'd be out in the garage, you'd smell me in here. That's where their trouble was, you know. And all under British ration, you know. And they hung on to the soap too for themselves, the good stuff, and gave us the junk. That's what all the boys up there are saying too. I mean, the British didn't treat us very good, they didn't.
How about modern plumbing? Did Archangel have that? Yeah. How about opportunities for bathing or changing your clothes? And
oh, yeah. Nothing like that. They smell a little bit. That damn Walt Carlson up Cadillac, he was a clean sweep. We called him the clean sweep. And that damn Eddie Haynes, the stable sergeant, on. So that darn sweep, my sleeping bag was always loaded with something damn thing biting me or something, you know. And we'd fill that damn thing full of insect powder, you know. When you'd get in, it'd just go poof like that, you know. So Carlson was all bragging. Nobody putting that damn kit in my bag. And, you know, he had a separate place where the kitchen was, the mess sergeant. We went in and put them damn papers in, and he started biting them that night, and that damn Haynes, he couldn't keep quiet. We had been drinking a little vodka.
That's what I mean.
I sold more than one blanket for a bottle of vodka out there. And American blanket with U.S. on the back. See, and some gal would be going down the street someday with U.S. across there sewed into a dress. Well, we had times up there. But when we got We all got back except, well, quite a few of them. You'll read them in the 50. I went to that burial in Detroit where the Fuller buried the big one. I went to that burial. And I used to belong to the State Association until I organized the Fuller Airport. But they, you get that gang together and we'll give you a lot of good stuff.
Yeah,
I'll get that damn cool urine. I'm going over there and I'll get started on this thing for you. I'll get that gang together down to the FW hall.
Okay.
You can duck over and I can, it's only a short drive from Holland.
Sometime after first week of July.
That's right, yeah, that's right.
We'll get
you together. You'll have plenty of stuff. Get Petropoulos, he's a good one. He'll get my wife, you.
Yeah.
She never met him before. The great agreement is I'm the great agreement to Petropoulos.
We're going to dinner.
You said he stayed in the Rustin family's home. Describe that again.
Yeah, sure. It was they treated us good, but all they were looking for is something to eat. I don't blame them. They didn't have it.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be just the same as you walking in here, or in any home, if you hadn't had mukka like flour and you hadn't had sugar. And you hadn't had anything but black bread and probably, they mixed all kinds of junk together there they had. And things were running shorter and shorter and shorter. See, the government had been overthrown. See, and it was one of them things. And the farms weren't very big, you know.
How about where you
from? Oh, on top of the shoals, yeah. Oh, a few cockroaches up there. That didn't bother nothing. They loved me. They beat the hell out of me. And, you know, we had them old rats. You see, I had leather ones on when you saw that picture.
Mm-hmm.
But we had them rat ties. And the only place they bite me is between the shoe and there. And they would bite the devil out of me. But we had to sleep. We couldn't stay up all night fighting bugs, you know. Oh. And then one place, we moved into a little town, Chushka. And the officers had a quarters there, a great big house. They're nice looking homes, you know. They're all made with logs. And they're all hemp packed with, like, you take a rope, a chunk of rope, and that's hemp. And you pound that in there for heat. That keeps the heat of the cold air out. And we went in there, and Captain Axtell came over, and he says, Marcher, they said you was in the medical corps, or you know more about bugs and stuff. And I said, well, what's the matter now? He says, God, you got to go there. We went over there and stuff. That's when we moved in yesterday. He says, it's just a lie. I said, you can't be. Not that nice place. And so they sent us over there. We went over, and we had a big pump that they had there, we got from the British, and it had some stuff that smelled like tar, and it smelled like lysol, but it was tar, and we sprayed that thing upstairs. We started upstairs, and when you came downstairs, before you could get downstairs, you'd think it was raining. They were about that deep on the floor.
Was that about half a foot?
they were just coming running down. They were just dropping out of that ceiling, you know, and we shoveled them all out, but it stunk in there. And tar, and that it was like kerosene. And they told us to be watch out. The British had it, used it in other places, like in Africa. And so, you know, see, they were used to that kind of stuff. They go into them countries. See, Britain was used them. The Britons were used to that kind of stuff moving into these countries where they had been overthrown and stuff. You know. So we got them cleaned out finally, but all there was some dandy. And then the restrooms is what you had to watch. I felt sorry for some of the troops. They break out, you know, from the rations, you know, like mutton and greasy stuff, you know, and some people can take it and other people throw it off.
Okay, do the reactions of the peasants to the troop change as you stay there?
They Archangel, when we got in there in September, you know, when we landed in there, it was kind of reaction. It was different, see, like, you know, it was a different set up, but towards Christmas time there, and you know, the first of the year changed a little, and because the Americans were feeding them a little too, you know,
so the relations
got better. Yeah, sure. Oh, it got better towards the end, and when we left there in July, they were all good about it, because we didn't jip them or rob them or steal them from. But I'll tell you, just they took us at first. We'd go downtown in Archangel City, and first, and we'd go into a restaurant, and you know, the restaurant, all they had was horse meat. And that's right. And it blew the dickens. When we came in at first, we'd like it'd be 15 rubles. after we'd been there 2 weeks with 65 roubles, and I went to 100 roubles first day. But you didn't have steak, and you had mutton over to your barracks, and you'd get a steak. You didn't know it was horse meat. What the devil? You ate it. But all the blues that began to take. And the marketplaces then, in that spring, when we got ready to leave there, see, it had quieted down. See, the instant we left, because they were parading in Detroit on 4th of July. And when by that time, the festival started coming in King Farms. Then the Bolsheviks got in their seat, the Bolsheviks today is the one that started getting these farmers organized and getting them straightened up. Well, that's why the country is today. Maybe we've got some beautiful farms there right now where we live, out there, because very good country. That Divina River's a mile and a half wide, you know, and it backs way up, and it's all black land, you know, back in there. But there was no farms on it. See, others saw it. He kept them down. And that's where the trouble was. The rich of the country, when the Tsar was in there, was running the country. And that's what the Russian peasants had in mind. And they wouldn't let them go here. Anyway, if they get mixed with fly like a farmer, they'd come and take the cattle and everything. So the country was Cossacks were coming to clean out a whole village and all that kind of stuff. See, and that's what friction was with the Bolsheviks. See, the people are living better under the Bolsheviks than they are under the Tsar. So the trouble was, I studied a lot of it after I came home about it. And they had the Mad Monk, Rasputin. You ought to get that book. You ought to read that. That's a good one, the Mad Monk. That was the Tsarina's boyfriend.
Where would you get the money to buy the stuff there, the rubles? I thought you couldn't get paid while you were over there.
We didn't get paid. I sold something. I had a warehouse full. I could sell anything. It's called the rubles. Cigarette. God, that's where them guys were selling cigarettes. Sure, they'd buy them. Sure, that's where you got them. I didn't get paid till I got back in the States. And then I had a bunch of rubles. We got ready to leave there, see. And God, I said, you know what I'm going to do here then. Couldn't take them to the bank. They'd investigate you if you did. See, so we'd sell it. We'd sell them stuff. And so, and they all of them, everybody, don't let these guys tell you that they didn't skulk the rubles to sell stuff, them buggers, any of them buggers. They all sold stuff, Petropolis and all. See, and the infantry too, you know. I told you about Morrison and Grand Rapids. The canteen was there, see. And they could go in there and buy cigarettes at the canteen, see. Well, then they'd just exchange it, see. And when I got back, we had some rubles left and some stuff, and we got into Brest, France. And we had quite a lot left, all of us did, and we didn't know where to go. So I went down to the Y. They couldn't do anything for us. So I went by, and I happened to see a Salvation Army house. And I went in and looked at them and said, man, I said, we've got a bunch of rubles. We just got, she said, yeah, I heard you just came in today. And I said, we got the boys over there. They got a lot of rubles, and we don't know what to do with them. And I said, these are the good rubles. These ain't the junks. Oh, God, when they overthrow the government that time, God, put a table full of rubles like that. We're two for a dollar at that time, that's the money. They were down to about 20 for 10 cents, you know.
Which rubles were the bad rubles?
From the Tsar, yeah. Mm-hmm. See, then they turned around and manufactured the other rubles, see. And so when I went into it, she said, well, sure, you have the boys figure out how much they are and put them in envelopes, and I'll go to the bank with them. She went. She got the boys to the women's celebration. The wives wouldn't do a thing for us. Oh, we had a hell of a time with the Y. Us guys, they ask them guys about the Y, they'll tell you.
Did you notice any difference between the way the Russians felt towards the Americans and the way we felt towards the other allies, such as the French and the
British? Well, they liked the Americans. Uh-huh. But here's the funny thing about a Russian. You would walk in a Russian house, and you'd have the same uniforms on, all of them, see? And they'd say, Russians would say, Ingliski? Nedir Ingliski, Amerikanski, oh, Dobro Amerikanski. And then you'd walk in, and we'd catch them, you know, and we'd say, we'd walk in, you know, like in the house and stuff like that. And they'd say, Ingliski, Amerikanski, oh, Ingliski, oh, Dobro Ingliski. See, just the way the wind was, see, they thought who you were, see. So that you couldn't depend on that, see, whether they liked you or whether they didn't. Because one time they'd tell you were all right, and the next time they'd tell you Amerikanski and Dobro meant no good, see. See, that's the way it was. If they could get anything out of you, then you were a good sport. The same in this country today. That's right.
Did you have any contact with the engineers on the other, on the battle fronts?
No.
How did you feel about interfering in Russia's internal affairs?
Well, it was something that I didn't know what to say about it sometimes. After you saw the condition of the country and how the poor Russians lived, you wondered what the Tsar had did wrong, because he was running the country and the rich were living. The Cossacks would come through and take, they told us that, the Russian Jews even told me that. They would come through, we had to hide it. They had stuff buried all over, you know, like food and everything, behind their stores and everything, you know. I'd get invited out once in a while. We would, you know, to come to somebody's house, you know, like at Christmas and something, or Jewish holidays. And I wasn't a Jew, but they'd invite you in because I could talk to them in German. And they would tell us they have food buried. You'd wonder, where did they get all the food? And they'd have food, you know, like old carrots and stuff like that, and lettuce and stuff. They'd have it, but it was all buried in the backyard after they had some place way over in the swamp that they raised it. So it was one of them things. But Archangel City was mine. The city had streetcars and everything. You know, like the guy said, there, one of them ran the motor in front and the other was collecting money in the back room. Well, shit, we would have been there in streetcars. And then another thing from Bakaritsa Station down there, you know, at the bottom, to cross the river in the wintertime, that river froze over, you know. See, they ran railroad trains across the river from Bakaritsa to Archangel. See, they froze the ties, then you could run an engine and everything across. That's how thick the ice was. But we used to ride the reindeer outfit. So the Eskimos that came down from Lapland into Russia had reindeers. And then they had an all-bone sled made out of whalebone and a long hickey, and we'd ride them things. Pay them so much to go across the river. And then them little ones, their skin would be like that. It was all covered with whale oddies, but they'd lay on the ice there. They'd
kind put of pinkish color?
Pinkish color. Put them to sleep. They'd put them to sleep, you know, shake them like that on the ice. The mother wouldn't there, they'd lay. And the old man would run across the river, take us across the river. We'd pay him for it, but they'd reindeer. And once in a while we'd get a bottle of vodka and give him a little drink and he'd go a little faster.
But how did you feel, though, about interfering in the internal affairs of Russia?
I didn't like it. I don't like it. I don't believe in interfering in the other man's politics. That's his politics. The same as in this country. Republicans are this, Democrats are this. That's their way of running the country. We can't change it. Because the men just start stepping out of things and getting in trouble. That's why we're having all these arguments on politics in this country all the time. One says Watergate this, and I said Watergate that. Watergate's a joke to me anyway because I make them laugh. Us kids, when we were kids, we used to get a quarter for sneaking in the saloon and stealing the petitions, bringing over Republican as Watergate. Sure, that's life. That was kids. Mm-hmm. Sure, your kids were your. Don't tell your druggist relation in Chicago. That ain't any different than it is here. You know how it goes.
Did you feel that way at that time? Was it?
I did towards the end because I felt sorry for the poor people of the country because it was the Tsar had. Lived like they lived over there in a lavish place up the pocket or something. Ooh, God, the mansion up there, and they had big parties, I guess, before everybody, the villagers all talked about it. When the Tsar was here, when he'd come in the summertime, and the Cossacks had all come, everybody had to stay off the street and all the things because they were going to be there for the summer. Beautiful up there in the summertime. Sun up at 7 o'clock at night. Beautiful, you know. All fixed up, beautiful horses they had, they must have had. I saw some pictures there. I don't know what it's all about now. But they came a long way for this, the way it seems. Under the conditions they had, they came a long way.
Do you feel that there was any justification for the Allied involvement there?
Well, the only reason was because the Germans were going to come with that, so we were there to keep the Germans from coming in the back way on England.
How about after the armistice?
Well, that's when we were. I don't know what they kept us up there for. I don't know what for they kept us up there. We sat up there in July. And I was dishing out shovels like we'd have to go out and dig, you see. And a lot of them got killed even after that, you know. And we'd have to go out and bury them. God, when the guys that bring the shovels bring me back too, the handle and the other part, they busted. They wasn't going to dig no graves or do any road work or anything after the armistice was signed in Trent. And I don't blame them. Not even.
How prevalent was that?
What?
How prevalent was that?
Yeah.
Men with attitudes.
Oh, towards the end, got the attitudes. Oh, very prevalent. Towards the end it did, you see, because it was getting to that. They wanted to get home, you see. So when I come home, they said the first thing, going looking for for a job. We must have been in prison. God, everybody's been home here a year. I got that thrown in my face more than once. Where in the hell were you, Archer? I said, I was up in Russia. What the hell did you do wrong up there? What the hell did you in the coop up there? Yeah, that's right. That's the answer we got. See, us came home late. See, the infantry was home and all discharged. God, I don't know when we got to Camp Sheridan. Then I had all them supplies and, you know, to check in. And I had them all there and I had dished in except the helmets. And then the guys gave me the helmets back, you know. Some of them, we had a whole bunch of extra helmets and stuff. And I walked into Camp Sheridan and I had all my records there. And the guys said to them, this was over in Ohio here, see. And there was only six of us, one of them, Mess Sergeant and I, Eddie Haynes. We went over to the stable sergeant. He had all the bills to check off. He turned the horses in and all that stuff. The guy said, what the hell am I going to do with that? What are you bringing them over here to me for? And I said, well, we were told we had to have records for so we could get our discharge. He said, I don't want your damn junk. And I had all them helmets. I must have had, oh, and I had everything else, coats and everything like that. And he said, throw them over there in the warehouse if you want to. I wanted to get home. So I went, I said to him, when can you get OKSR discharge? Well, he says, next Monday. And he says, can we have them helmets? So I sent every kid in Muskegon a helmet, 15 cents. Went out the post office. Went down the post office Saturday morning. That guy in the post office was ready to kill me down there. Chillicothe, Ohio. We sent every kid a helmet. Did come to them. Well, I saw them supplies that came out of wrestling that we brought back. You know. But right now, I'm sliding. I've got that into a fight. Tires. Never been on rent. Thousands and thousands of dollars. And this is no joke. I got a lot of guys that were with me. We've got a guy.
Where did they burn them?
Burn them in breast frames. Went down a slide off the boat.
Why did they even bother to cut them over there?
Yes. It would be a surplus in the United States.
Well, why did they
even
bother to
ship them over there? I bought sealskins up there in the first stores for 10 cents. Beautiful. They were all kinds of beautiful stuff. Had them all in barrel bags. Thought I was going to get them to America. They went down the slide. See, I was in charge of flags. I was the first man off the transport. And here I was loading them all on these trucks. And I said, where are they taking all? We'll show you. Guys were all lined up there. Down they went to the middle of that slide. Vicky was probably like one of the big sand dunes down there, like down the top of one of the big sand dunes. Right down the slide, they had metal hickeys sliding down the gas track and burning them up. Damn, oh, okay. And then the army could have left them in France, but it would be a surplus, and they didn't know where to store them. See, that we were for New York, the army was there, you know, we were there, so I don't know what they ever brought them back for. They did. Made me shudder sometimes when I thought of all that stuff. Come back and try to buy a suit of clothes with this little bonus you got.
Did you serve with any of the other Allied troops?
Yeah, French and was next to us and Canadians. I like the Canadians. Canadians were real guys. Yeah, they were real folks. They were real soldiers. They were a bunch of Canadians right next to artillery unit. Yeah. McLachlan, McCarthy, McLachlan. They were all the same. They were good soldiers.
How about the French?
French, oh well, they were tired. They were all tired. They had to have their wine. They always had their wine. one time, I'll never forget, this is a nice story. The Frenchie, he came in, and the boat came in from France, and there was the woolly animal. They had them hogshead of wine, God, the big ones, God, like that, and it rolled off the boat into the river. The line of river. God, I never saw so many hearts. Did you ever know the right? Them frogs, they were running out there. And I said, oh, shut. What's the matter? Oh, you look. And there it was. It rolled off the boat. Off the tugboat they had there that he got it off the transom. I could have died. That Frenchman, I thought he was. Well,
you
we helped him.
Wine.
What? He was always giving us wine. He says, and then he kept to tell me, you no more get. I said, what are you talking about? I wouldn't get any more if I didn't help him get it out. I bet there was 50 Frenchmen out there. They rolled it up, but they got it up, don't you? They would have worked that hard, they'd have died. They were good soldiers, though, the Frenchmen were. They had enough of the war. The ones I felt sorry, they said, the last troops that came up from England, after we'd been there about 3 months that winter, they were the little Royal Scots that they were had been hurt. France, and they were sent up there to soldier. And some of them were shot in the leg, you know, and you know how that would be, how cold it is for them. And their equipment was all right, but they couldn't soldier. They couldn't stand post or march or anything like that because the guys would hit you all. Then hurt from service before, and they sent them up there called the Royal Scots. And they were good little guys. I felt so sorry for them because they were casuals, you know, what they were. England. it came out of it all right, because they shipped all the hemp back every time you transport it, go back loaded with stuff in Russia, like hemp and stuff, motors and everything like that. They didn't pay anything for them. They got them for nothing. The country was in that shape.
Did you think that England was basically involved in Russia for its own benefit financially?
It got plenty for it. Our equipment cost plenty.
Did you realize that at the time?
I did at the time. After we'd been there about 6-7 months, and you start to realize what's going on here. Because you don't, And I think the Russians realized it too. And you see there was nobody to stop them. So they brought us up and they shipped us up there.
How did that affect your attitude toward the British?
Oh, it got kind of rough toward the end, though. Like Ironsides, he was all right, but his troops were always dressed up. They've been soldiers. We did it everywhere. That's what these guys will tell you. That's why they didn't have much use for British.
Did the British direction of the expedition affect the morale then? Did you ever feel that you were over there working for the British instead of the Americans?
Yeah, you did when they hand you the rations, see, because I was in charge of all that, like all them supplies and stuff. And when you see all them bicycles and all this junk coming in there at that warehouse and all charged back to America, I had a sign for all that stuff. And you wondered where it went. We never shipped back. We never shipped that stuff in the warehouse. But we shipped like other stuff back, you know, like surplus tires and stuff, and it all went on the transport. From another warehouse way down in Murmansk, see, not in Archangel. We had warehouses in Murmansk, and that was a lot of that stuff was on the boat when we went back to Brest. But the stuff that was in Archangel was all charged back to us, like clothing and all that stuff that we had paid for all that. Oh, they needed money on that stuff. See, we had no American equipment at all. It was all British. The guns I even had were British. And that was the feeling, you know. See, the feeling was very low for us. Even the shovels I had in the warehouse were all British. We had wood of them here in this country that we could have owned.
How about the flags?
The
flags?
Yeah, everything. And the cigarettes and stuff, you know, like that. And stuff that would like, because I never smoked in my whole life. But one day I was in the warehouse and went for a friend says to me, he was from Trinidad, Colorado, but he was coming to Detroit and got married. And he says to me, you want to see something funny, Rudy? And I said, what? He says, I just told him, so why have you? The guy over there said he had a few of surplus on cigarettes. I wanted to buy some. And I said, what do you mean? And he says, he's selling them out. He thinks they're going to move out. They had a wide hut there. Down, not right in Bacaritza, but down over there where we got across the river. And he says, I see you. He says, don't leave it by the city of Vanuatu. I said, you got donation. I said, you sold these to one of my sergeants. And I said, thanks to Grand Rapids. I don't know. I said, Grand Rapids. And I said to him, what do you mean I sold it to him? I said, just a minute. I said, give me them two you got right there in your hand. Give me some of them. What should I was going to give them to you? I said, no. I said, you got any more in there? And he said, why? And I said, you better not. So this is happening. Here's one of these things. And it was from some club, woman's club, from some church, division church, to the top of the gun. Inside of it.
You'll have it on your tape.
Back to it.
How much of that kind of graph went out of the why? Did a lot of it
I don't know. Sometimes I wonder about it. I never complained about it, but some of the boys complained terribly. You know, it was all right, but now, like, we were stationed there in Aldershot in England, and we couldn't, there was no wire around there, you know, and we went down to London a couple of times, and every time we would get down there, we'd say the wire out was full, and it would be like on Saturday, we could get down to England, and we'd catch a train and go down, and we'd Not too many of them were engaged with them, so I didn't worry about it, but they'd come to us right back from engineering and stuff. Oh, they couldn't do this. And just like when I went there and asked them about the money, oh, they didn't have, they couldn't do nothing about the money. Well, aren't you changing the bank and fund? No, but they have to take care of that themselves, you know. Well, that woman said, we sure bring them down. I brought her a whole bunch of envelopes with me, and she had the money right in the books, you know. And I funded it. It was bad, too.
They were very helpful. Did they charge for all their services?
No. No, they like they did all like, you know, coffee and stuff like that when they had it there. You know, we'd go in there and we'd buy it less than going to restaurants. But half the time they wouldn't be open, you know, where you were always welcome. So,
what did you say before about the flags? Was the American flag flown in many places?
Not very many places.
How about over a headquarters company or something?
Like that would be all right. Like her, we were over at Bacharitsa there, see, or over the engineering headquarters, but not very many others. They're mostly Greek flags and Russian flags. And not too many Russian flags at that time either, because it was just in between the two Bolsheviks and the Tsars. And pictures of, like, the Mad Monk and all that. They had that up there. They made a big sign around, a big red sign around him, you know. And the Tsar, you never saw him. And the poor people, you know, the churches, you know, they wanted to go to church. They were the religious countries that they didn't find. Tsar, so he kept them under his thumb with the church. And that's what made the Bolsheviks mad, and that's why they built the churches out. So the Tsar used the churches as a crutch to keep him in power. So. And that's where they put the true punch down.
Did you ever run into any Bolshevik propaganda?
No, I never did. Not at that time, but all they kept saying is Bolshevik, Bolshevik, and big, see, the individual, you know, see, was telling that.
Did the British also employ propaganda?
Not too much, a little bit, probably, that the country was, like Ironside, when he was there, he kind of preached that, you know, and he wouldn't let, you know, like the guards and stuff, you know, in the warehouses, you know, we had guys that we wanted to, you know, the Russians would be on the gate. But he'd have two or three British standing there right beside him, you know, see, to watch him, see, so they wouldn't steal supplies. And it was, most of it was paid for by American supply companies, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did any letters which you received from home mention news reports about the expedition and the speeding paper?
Yeah, I used to get them once in a while from my mother, but they'd censored all that stuff, you know, see. Half the time, they all chopped to pieces, you know, see. And the same with anything we sent out was all censored, see, you know, see.
They censored mail that you received?
Yeah, well, we had a lot of that censored. Wanted to know why we wasn't coming home and all that stuff. And, but there'd be little pieces cut out, but they had read in life. They had read in the paper, see. My mother said, what they had read in the paper. See.
And then you couldn't tell what
it was. Yeah. See, it was scratched out. But, oh, anything we'd send from up there, oh, would be all scratched out. Well, some of them guys, they'd write some dandies. And you couldn't sneak them out because they went right through the censorship. Oh, the way all went through England.
What about the American Sentinel? The paper?
They didn't have any up there. But I never saw them up there.
You never saw them?
I never seen Sentinel. While I was up there, unless they didn't get it over to Bacharitsa. They probably had it over in Archangel City, but I never saw them. Some of them, did they have them up there?
Yeah, it was first published in December of 1918, a paper just for the American Troops, so published in American Troops. So, like the Stars and Stripes.
But, yeah, I know.
How did you spend holidays?
Just there, not around, ringing the bells on Easter, up in the church steeples, you know, they celebrated holidays and had fun, you know. But that's it. Well, most of the time we were busy in the supply outfit, getting that stuff up to the fronts to the guys up there that were up there in that section, you know, like barbed wire and stuff, and shovels, and keeping going, like, and getting the warehouses straightened out. And I had quite a lot of work.
Mm-hmm. What about the Red Cross? Did you have any dealings with them?
Not too much. I had very little to do with the Red Cross. I didn't. I wasn't surprised, too. I don't know. There was no Salvation Army unit up there in Archangel. I was up there, and I think the Red Cross, but I never got anything from them up there. And I know that some of the guys said they got a jackknife someplace, and maybe that was in England when they were stationed there. I think that was in England.
When did you first discover that the American troops were evacuated?
I would say this week. We got out of there in July, or we got out of there late, and they were they were parading here. I think probably in February, I knew somebody was moving out in February.
How did you feel when the other troops left and the engineers
were? We wondered what the devil was going on. We wondered what the difference was going on. And then, you know, here's the funny part of it. See, there was my mother, Mrs. Gertz, Mrs. Ross, and five of them, all gone to refuge in prison. See, and they wondered why their boys wasn't home. And the afternoon, and we had all come home. So they went to the mayor of Muskegon. Went to the mayor and said, well, I can't do anything about it. Why ain't my boys coming home? And I got one letter that had been mailed before Christmas. This was way up in May. Some of that stuff. The Christmas packages were on the transport that was coming into Murmansk, not into Archangel, but went to Murmansk, and then they put it on a tugboat up to the Vina River, and then, you know, it's been out in the North Sea, and all that water had been all over. That when the cookies, they were all just cracked, they were just flour. See? That was a Christmas package.
Did you think that you might have to remain in Russia for another year?
Well, we knew being in supplies. I knew that we were going to move pretty soon, but you couldn't tell me about when it was. And when it came like a shock, because, you know, they had all that business there. In that slumber station, you know, and that's where we were, down below there. That's where they finally found out that it was a mosquito.
How did you feel about the American troops evacuating without having really finished what they had started doing?
Well, we wondered what it was all about. And we came from sailing in West France, and everything had been over there so long, and it was quieting down, and we sailed in there and put in the port, and one guy was at the dock there, and he said, where the hell you guys been? I said, we just came in from Russia. Well, he said, the Russian gang passed through here 5 months ago. I said, I know. You have the infantry passed through, and he was in charge of warehousing. And I said, we've been up there all waiting for him to drag us out of there. And he said, how was it up there? I said, well, it's all right, I guess. I don't know what to tell you. It wasn't any good. And the first thing he said, what the hell are you doing up there? That's about it. See, everybody went to know. And they're still asking. They're still asking.
Still asking.
Guys, they are still.
Did you discover that many people had heard about your expedition?
Oh, yeah, everybody knew about it then after we got home. But before that, I guess they didn't publish too much about it.
Had they heard an accurate account?
No. I don't think. After we had been home a long, long time, I know the church wanted to move, and they were losing church where we went, wanted me to come to the church and tell the kids about it, see. And I said, well, what am I telling them? They want to know about socialism, you know, and stuff, you know. Well, we better keep quiet until we find out what this is all about. I can tell you all about it. The Tsar was overthrown, but that's all. Well, then the kids kept there, and the minister kept asking me what the old soldier got for. I said, well, because he was, I guess, I didn't run my country. Well, he says, well, if you only got her under books, and then I said, well, the kids asked me that. And I said, well, I can't touch you.
So even when you look back on it today, you still can't think of any real purpose for that.
I don't know what the only purpose that I can tell them is that they were going to stop the Germans from coming in the factory, protecting them, and I think that's the only reason the Marines gave them any good.
But there's never been any explanation given as to why you remained.
And we could never figure out why we remained up there after the infantry was pulled out. And because the soldiers and the engineering men, you know, and stuff wanted to get back to the businesses. We had a lot of college members too, you know, back three, four of them were going down to Valparaiso University, you know, that went in the service, you know. God, they wanted to get back to school, you know, and there wasn't more GI Bill. See, there was no GI Bill for me either. Not a thing, we didn't have any GI Bill at that point. Just the gas men, they got a pension of 135 years. They were the gas in France. $35 in that bonus line and went into it. And the Washington to get that bonus money for the protection of the first year. But we sent it out, we sent five for $35, and $35 would be like $350. So we sent them over there. Well, who do you think the standard on the top? Our great friend, Mr. McCarthy. Great McCarthy. Get them bums out of here. I'll never forget that. I shall return. And every time I read that in my paper, I get bored. I shall return. We should have returned for our bonus. We had to wait for it. There was a bad feeling after that war, too, on account of all that pushing around.
Several accounts about the American Expeditionary Force and the whole Allied intervention claim that the British used the Americans for their own purposes and that they placed excessive hardships on the Americans in particular so that Washington would send more troops over. Do you?
I absolutely do believe it because they were crying their eyes out up there in Russia. They were doing all the work and we weren't doing anything, and we were doing all the work and they weren't doing nothing, you know. And we had to buy all our supplies from them. They liked us, you know, we could sell all our supplies and we got to us. That's where we loaded up all the supplies and everything came to and everything was stored in England for France too. They stored it and they charged everything they charged, stored it, you paid for it. I know, because you have warehouses full of stuff. But we were starting there near Aldershot, a place called Guildford, where the ammunition was all made. And we had some trucks, and we had to go over there for something, some guns or something. And we took the two British lorries over there to get them. And we didn't have any trucks, and we went over to Guildford and get them. And I said, where's the American guns? Your American guns are there, where's this guy? And they just came off there. I said, what are you talking about? I said, I left Camp Mills Long Island. We had warehouses full. Well, she said, they must not be any good. So we had all British Russians going up in the... They made some money on that deal.
Did your experience in northern Russia affect your outlook on life?
No. I come back, I was happy-go-lucky guy, kid, you know, just full of hell, going to get back. And, but it made you feel that God, you wasted a couple of years of your life, you know. But after you... I've lived that way all my whole life. Now I've retired. Everybody says, ain't you playing golf? Ain't you good? I can go to bed right now and go to sleep and sleep all night. I don't worry about what the work goes on today. That's the way to look at it. It's the different people that all of a sudden we started way off. Come back and started thinking we couldn't get jobs. We lost a lot in the first couple of years.
You really lost
them? Died. So it's like the gas. You know, at that bridge of Grand Haven, we had two on there. You see, it's the only job they could do. They couldn't get jobs in the factory. So they got gas, and then some of them got shots, you know. And there was no GI Bill coming to the school. It didn't happen. And their pension was so much smaller than what they gave. $135 was the highest pension man could get money after the first World War. That was the highest pension. And that ain't very much for the money. Guys that felt bad about it, you know, what did you do about it? Yeah. And then some of them, like the artillery men, you know, that were in France. I had a very good friend that was in the artillery in France. He lost his hearing. You know what kind of business he was in before? He was a man that put went into that circle. We don't know. I found enough lost weight that we can refine it down a little bit. And I think we went back in a bicycle to get himself here. Only he was really got missing. And that time, $25 for open his eight, that was a lot of money. Here comes our friend. Here comes my daughter. Here, get out of that pocketbook, Cat. She'll be in it, kids. You got any more?
The only other thing I was going to ask you is if there's anything else that you can remember that you might be interested in or you haven't asked you about.
I have a few girls up there, Dasha and Paula, so put that on there. That's all. Thank you, kids. Thanks for coming down. Now, if you want anything else, let us know and we'll be down.